everybody, I'm Kristen Maffei, recording from 1000 Birds Studio in Brooklyn, New York, and you're participating in a late-night conversation. 1000 Birds is a Brooklyn commercial art and sound studio specializing in sound design, Foley, voiceover recording, sound effects editing, and 5.1 mixing. Your project deserves to be heard. Whether in a theater, on television, a laptop, or earbuds, 1000 Birds will deliver the best quality sound. To learn more about their sound design or to attend one of their monthly live music events, please go to otbirds.com. Tonight's episode is sponsored by Optic Nerve Arts. Optic Nerve Arts Tattoo Studio has been serving Portland's tattoo needs with style and skill since 2003. Their talented artists are attentive, detail-oriented, and versed in a wide variety of tattoo genres. Check out their portfolio at opticnervearts.com or drop by their inviting, spacious studio at 2224 Northeast Alberta. My guest tonight is Anna Badehoven, commissioner and producer of Future Library by Katie Patterson. Tonight, Anne and I discuss public art, the future of literature, and the space of the library. Tonight, you can also win a copy of Control Bird Alt Delete by Alexandria Peary. You can win by listening to this episode and correctly answering the following question before any other listener. How many years will pass before the Future Library books are available to the public? Enjoy the conversation and then email your answers to me at kristin@latenightlibrary.org. That's kristin@latenightlibrary.org. The first listener to answer the question correctly will receive a copy of Control Bird Alt Delete. All right, everybody, it's time to listen.
Composition. It's time to listen. Well, it is an artwork. But it's also a forest. Mm-hmm. It's also a room in my library. So there are texts. And so, yeah, but it is an artwork, actually, running 100 years.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Think so, too.
And what is your role in the project as a commissioner and producer?
It is a development company who are the commissioner of this project. Mm-hmm. And our challenge some years ago was, what kind of artwork are we going to commission? You know, we're developing the whole new harbor in Oslo. Mm-hmm. And how can we commission artworks that gives us something different than the drop sculpture?
Right.
I usually say that Norwegian property developers, if they would choose freely, they would choose a bronze sculpture. Mm-hmm. And especially a moose.
A moose?
Because that's what's it's like making a little bit fun of Norwegian, what the reptile brain decision would be.
Right.
When it comes to art. So I commissioned Situations and Claire Doherty, who wrote this curatorial vision. And through that curatorial vision, that's called Slow Space, I went on this journey with my board. And they were so trustworthy and they really has opened their minds about art and mm-hmm. what art can do. And this really made a platform of choosing artists. So then when we chose Katie Patterson, well, we wouldn't know what we would get.
Right.
But we knew that she will be concerned about time and be inspired by the slow space curatorial vision.
And so was your curatorial vision going into it to have a project that would span 100 years, or was that something that came from Katie Patterson?
Oh, that came from Katie Patterson, mm-hmm. because if I wasn't even going to think about getting a proposal that would last 100 years, you should have seen my reaction. because then my job is to find a way to make this happen. Personally, even I had to go through this process, you know, imagining. So, you know, in my world, people are realizing projects that are going to end quite soon in the future. Mm-hmm. And so how I'm going to convince people, even myself, to take on a project that lasts 100 years, to take that risk even. You know, there's so
right.
many risks. But then going through this process with Katie, I've been so fascinated by that we have to take risks or nothing will happen. Mm-hmm. And developing a city is also about making decisions today that will last for at least 100 years. So
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Not so strange. Yeah.
And do you have a background in city planning or?
Yeah, this is what I work mostly with. But I do also have another background, and that I grew up on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And with that farm, there's both farmland, of course, but there is also forest. So I spent quite a lot of time in the forest when I was a kid. And then I was supposed to inherit the farm. But when my dad died and I was quite young, I said, no. I'm an urban woman.
Mm-hmm.
I hate this lonely life and all that. But it's in my genes, you know.
Right.
So when Katie proposed this, I started remembering what this means, how disconnected I've been
mm-hmm.
to nature. And how slowly also nature develops, and how slowly the forest develops, and how important that is to be reminded on that, especially when you are living in a city.
Yeah, absolutely. Where things feel like they move so fast, but
everything
actually
moves so fast.
Yeah, huh? And development is it's a quick process in some ways, but like any sort of natural growth, it also takes time.
Yeah. I think for me personally, and I think a lot of people that get involved in this project somehow are reminded of this, that we're so taking decisions so fast, you know, and we're kind of disconnected to the slowness, but we're starting to long for it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Can you tell me a little bit about the forest where these trees are being grown? So for our listeners who might not know this, the trees are being grown so that in 100 years they can be cut down and turned into paper to print these books, right?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Right.
And so what is it like to be in the forest now?
Right now, it is it's fall, so it's lots of colors right now.
Mm-hmm.
But this winter in March, we cut down a lot of the trees. And in May, we planted 1,000 new trees.
Wow.
So right now, it's like a cut-down forest in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And then every year from now, you can watch the trees grow 1 year at a time. So you can keep visiting the forest. It's like it's only 25 minutes from the center of Oslo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 25-minute walk from the underground. And it's very accessible, but you are really in the deep forest when you're there. And you can't hear the city, you can't see the city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also the purpose, that you should have this really quiet, slow feeling when you're there. And then the timber that we cut down this winter are not stored, and we will use that for the interior in a very special room in the new library in the city of Oslo.
Right. And what is that room going to look like? Do you guys have plans for
it yet?
We
don't know yet. We don't know yet. It's not going to be a very big room, but it's going to be very special.
Mm-hmm.
And so now Katie Patterson is working together with Lund Hagim and Natalie Oslo, the architects of the new city library, and working on the design. But obviously, it's going to be the forest that we actually cut.
Right.
So we're starting from there, but that's about what we know now. But I think it's going to be a very special room, and the texts the authors write will be kept there unread and unpublished for 100 years.
Yeah. And are those, so this is a sort of logistical question I have. Are those texts that are being written now being printed and stored on paper, or are they stored in some sort of technological way?
I'm very happy that you also get into these logistical questions, because I do that all the time. And we try to think of everything that can come up. Well, I'm sure we're going to come back to the first author.
Mm-hmm.
But the first, when we met the first author in late August, she had already decided what she wanted to do.
Oh, okay.
So she had bought paper that won't fade, mm-hmm. ink that won't fade. She has already planned to put it in a box, unread by anybody else than her.
Oh, wow.
On this paper. And she had also planned, I don't know that English word, but you know, when you seal it and you put your stamp on it.
Oh, yeah, a wax seal, yeah.
Yeah. So I can just see her coming with this box, you know,
mm-hmm.
and hand it over to us.
And is she going to handwrite it with that ink?
I'm not sure. Maybe she is, isn't she?
Yeah. Well, I guess nobody will ever know.
Somebody will know, but we won't.
Right, of course.
Yes.
And so I guess now is a good time to talk about your first author, Margaret Atwood. What makes her an ideal candidate to be the first writer for this project?
Oh, I think she is so wonderful. I mean, she is the one requirement when it comes to authors that we ever talked about was fantasy or imagination and time. And so that's the only criteria in a way when we start searching for authors. And Margaret Atwood does both. And not only that, she's speculating about the future. And for some reason, she's quite right about some things of the future.
It's true, yeah.
And that's quite scary as well. And she is deeply concerned about environmental issues too. And I think this combination made her a perfect first candidate for this. And we were so thrilled, you can't imagine, when we got her letter, her answer, very fast. And she said, yes. And that was so nice.
And I'm sure you can't tell me who you guys are thinking about for future authors, but you said you're looking for people with fantasy and imagination. Are there any other qualifications that you guys have?
Time. But it doesn't necessarily maybe have it has to be an author. It could be also people that are concerned about other things, not like famous Margaret Atwood author. We have set up a trust that will take care of this project for the next 100 years. And it's the trust who elects the author, and we'll do that one by one every year.
Okay.
So we are having a meeting in end of November, and that's when we start talking about it.
Right. And can you tell me a little bit more about this trust? Because that was another one of my questions. When you're creating a project that's spanning so many decades, you know, everybody who's working on it now will be dead by the time it's finished. So how does the trust stay self-sufficient, and, you know, how does it keep moving forward through time?
That's part of the risk I have to take. I found that a trust is, at least in Norway, the best organization that you could set up for taking care of a project that, like this, running for 100 years. Because the aim in trust is actually to be quite conservative, you know, the objectives of trust, that it's very conservative, and that's their only task is to take care of that and commission authors, and, you know, and so we found that that would be the best way to do it. And so that it will be elected new members, maybe every 4 or every 8 years or something. And we don't know how they're going to solve a lot of things. I don't know. And I'm happy I don't, because could you imagine? If there's a fire in the forest, what do we do then?
Right.
So it's like I'm handing over all these logistical challenges when I leave the trust, and that's fine. But I think that's how it is to be. Sometimes you might have to be quite pragmatic. You have to make decision in your contemporary time. We can't really foresee all the dilemmas that the trust will come into, but of course, we have to trust the trust to make decisions align the objective of the future library.
Right, of course.
Yeah, so we just have to take the risk.
And what are some other risks? You said a forest fire is one of them. What are other things that you guys are worried about logistically coming up?
Well, the consequence, of course, will be logistically, but 100 years is quite a long time. So what are the political situation in 100 years? How will Oslo City develop, for instance? How fast? Because right now, this is the city's forest. All around Oslo, there is a city forest, and it was bought 100 years ago so that the people living in Oslo would have a forest, you know?
Right.
Norwegians like to go in the forest in the winter and in the summer. So this was actually like a gift, a forest for the people of Oslo, citizens of Oslo. And this border between the city and the forest has been very, very important and still is. It's very holy in a way. You can't develop the city beyond this border into right. the forest. But of course, this can also change. So I'm still imagining, you know, that, well, maybe they come into a situation in maybe 50 years that they have to develop in that direction mm-hmm. into that forest. And I'm thinking, well, wouldn't that be quite beautiful then to let that small forest stay?
Right. And just be this small patch in the middle of everything.
Yeah. I think that's beautiful, actually. So I think when you're forced to find solutions in difficult situations, I think if you have the right attitude, it will work out. And I think this project now has gotten this enormous response from all over the world. And I think the city also should be very proud of having a project like this. And I think it will have a lot of attention. And I think maybe there will be a lot of foresters around the world that will look after it in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the response to it has been incredible, just from being here in the States and reading all the articles about it. Were you expecting this much publicity?
No, no way. No way, I wouldn't, you know. I couldn't even imagine. And it's so interesting for me being a Norwegian. Because mm-hmm. after all, in Norway, it's a little bit quiet about it. There is some, but people are a little bit, what is this? Why does this get so much attention in the world, you know? And right. what does it trigger in people? And I have the feeling, I haven't really discussed this with anybody, but I have the feeling that Norwegians don't see the forest for all the trees, mm-hmm. literally. And that we are up in a corner in the world, we have water, we have forest, we have nature, and we have peace. And maybe still we don't feel so threatened in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, I don't know, this could be an interesting issue. And I must admit that we are getting emails from around the world, personal emails, on people's reaction and thoughts about this project, which is very touching. And we will put that in an archive as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some, it seems like people, the project is actually giving them hope in a way.
Yeah, well, that's what struck me most about it, is this sort of sense of quietude and just optimism that the project sort of has to embody in and of itself to exist. You know, that, yeah, I think hope is a major part of it, that there will still be people, you know, not only who want to be reading these 100-year-old works, but people who exist to be reading them, you know?
Yeah. And so I think this is so important that it's almost a side project in a way to what are the effects of such an artwork
mm-hmm.
that really people get so involved in a very existential way from all cross culture, cross nations, cross territories at all and everything. And I think that's quite interesting part of the project. And a lot of things I think we are experiencing now that what also Katie Patterson thinks, that she's not predict or she prescribe anything, respond or anything,
mm-hmm.
but she gets a lot of respond. And she doesn't really know where it's going to take this project or what kind of respond, you know. It's really interesting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And so thinking about sort of the global reach that this has already had, will the works all be in English and Norwegian? Are they going to be in, you know, every language you can think of?
I think this is another logistical question, uh-huh. you see. but we haven't really thought about everything, and I think that will be impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these are the discussions we're going to have to work with in the trust also to solve it. Like question that is coming up all the time. What we have thought about is that the author shouldn't be worried about translations.
Mm-hmm.
That should be the trust's thing. So maybe we just have to, again, take the chance that languages that are represented in the library will not be gone by 100 years,
mm-hmm.
and that we can find people that can translate it when the book is going to be published. And leave it with that, that it's actually not read at all, not published. It's in the original language of the author. That's it.
Right. Where do you guys get the funding? Are you, is there a place where our readers could donate if they're interested, or is it all from private donors?
In Norway, we're not used to donations that mm-hmm. much. So it starts with the commissioner, the company I work for. We have a budget.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it won't last for 100 years. But my budget that I manage will last for some years.
Right.
So we will do the room. We've done the forest. But the forest is given to us by the municipality.
Oh, okay.
But we'll do the interior. We do some years of authors and running of the trust. And then we haven't really thought about it mm-hmm. yet. But it's not a big budget. It's not so much that is needed. Because it's really just the author and the hand, some events around that. So it's not a very expensive artwork. It's just lasting for a long time.
Right.
But of course, we have to. The trust has to work on how to do that and how to collect money. So we haven't discussed it yet, but we have to do that.
And I mean, I can't even imagine all of the planning that goes into a project of this magnitude. Like, what has the project management on it been like compared to other projects that you've worked on? And are there any, we've talked a little bit about the risks of doing something so long term. Are there any sort of successes that you didn't see coming that that ended up being really good for you?
Everything, I think, because just started with Katie asking me, well, I need a forest. Oh, no. Where am I going to get a forest, you know?
Right.
It's like, oh, I'm going to have to eat one bite of this elephant at a time. And so, well, I figured, well, that you have private owners and you have public owners of forest around Oslo. Mm-hmm. And I figured it needs to be closed. So luckily, when I asked to have a meeting with the director of that part of the municipality, I had to ask him, well, why I'm here? I actually want a forest. And he would go, okay, a forest? Okay, let's find a forest. And I couldn't believe my ears.
Right, that's amazing. Because
it was, and I think this is with this project. It's not big, you know. It's quite simple too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what makes this so enormously nice is that all the people I've been in touch with have been touched by it and have been willing to find solution.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally believe in making possible possible. I think most of the things we want to do is possible.
Right.
And when you're lucky to meet people with the same attitude, it is possible to do these kind of projects.
Absolutely.
So it came through, all of it. There is one thing, though, I haven't solved yet.
And what's that?
It is the printing press, because that's a challenge. I think there are lots of them, but it's really, that's a part of it, you know, the actual printing press, because we have to have a printing press, too, that will print on paper
mm-hmm.
in 100 years.
And what kind of printing, because I know, you know, I work in publishing, so I know, you know, a teeny tiny bit about this.
Please, give me advice.
Are you guys looking to do sort of like an old style, like Gutenberg printing press that could be used, you know, presumably without electricity or any sort of outside materials? Or are you going to do something more modern?
I think that decision probably needs some pragmatism as mm-hmm. well. And I have a friend who works in that industry, and he has started looking for one. But he then, because I don't know much about that, so he, of course, challenged me on what kind of paper are you printing on? Is it going to be handmade? Is it, you know?
Right,
and,
yeah.
And then you need a robust printing press. You mm-hmm. need something really robust. And he said, well, you have to have it run once a week for 100 years if it's going to work.
Keep it fresh.
So if you know somebody or if you have any good advice, please let me know, you know.
Yeah, I will definitely think about it.
That's good.
And is the plan to keep it in that same room as all of the texts? Or
there won't be space for it there.
Okay.
But I think we need to find a solution that, like I said, if it has to be run once a week for 100 years, we need to find also somebody that could take on that task, you know.
Right, the keeper of the press.
Yeah. So we haven't solved everything yet, but I think that's probably the most important thing. But everything else is taken care of. But I totally believe it's going to find a solution. And I think there are people out there knowing how we should do this.
Yeah, absolutely. And the people who know those solutions are people who will care deeply about this project, I think.
Right. And that's why I've been thinking all print people in that industry, they love their work, you know, and
right.
the handcraft. And I think it's, a lot of people are getting more and more involved in old handcraft things, appreciating that. So I think it's going to be, I think it's going to find a good solution. I'm sure.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think, yeah, with all, so we're recording in Brooklyn right now, and the number of people I know here who are interested in sort of growing and canning their own food or making their own clothes, it's incredible.
Yeah, and it actually, we have a working on two projects,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is Future Farmers. She's there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, do you know them?
No, I don't, but that sounds incredible.
Yeah, and they will all, yeah, that project is also incredible. But it's going to be more known now in the near future. But it is actually Amy Franceschini. I don't know if you heard about her. She's she's from San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and she works in an art collective called Future Farmers. And they have established, so that's another logistical challenge, you
right.
see. It's going to be last for a long time as well. And it's about building soil.
Oh, that's incredible.
And the cultural grains. And so we're actually making a small farm in the city of Oslo.
And has she made something similar in San Francisco, or this is sort of the first of its kind?
I don't know if you've heard about it. She did Victory Gardens outside City Hall in San Francisco.
Oh,
she made allotment gardens there. She's amazing. Future Farmers are amazing. And I've learned so much, both from Katie Patterson and Future Farmers, and I think they're two great projects.
Yeah, and I think they go hand in hand sort of towards survival of, you know, humanity and of our culture.
They go slow, and they go exactly what you're saying. And it's interesting how also different the artists are, but how complementary they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
In this subject. You know, and it's very odd for a property developer to choose these kind of artworks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when the curator, Claire Doherty, came to Oslo to start working on the curatorial vision, she visited the Opera House in Oslo, which has become very famous because
mm-hmm.
it's a roof where everybody can walk on. And it's a public space. And these artworks are taking place around the Opera. This is the development area that I'm working with.
Oh, I see.
So when you enter the Opera roof, you're actually experience something physical,
mm-hmm.
that the time slows down. It's a public space, non-commercial. And feeling this and being aware of this, we figured instead of commissioning artists that make tradition or more sculptures,
mm-hmm.
we want to commission artists that can offer somehow these kind of feelings again. This experience of slowness in the middle of the city.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's incredible.
And I think both Future Farmers and Katie Patterson are very much aligned with this vision.
Definitely. So we're coming towards the end of our interview, but I just wanted to ask one more question to end on. And that's, if you could choose an author, like you personally could choose an author to write one of these books, and that person can be living or dead, who would you pick?
I can't. I'm the chair of the trust, even. And I would like, Margaret Atwood had been so funny when people, I've heard many interviews with her, and every time they ask her, what is she going to write? She's saying, I'm not telling. I'm not telling. So, sorry, complete secret.
So you're giving me the same answer. You're not telling.
Yes. Like Margaret Atwood.
Well, that's fair enough. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Oh, it was great. Thank you.
Yeah, and good luck with the project. I can't wait to see where it goes over the course of my lifetime.
Yeah, and send all donators over here.
Absolutely.
You know, we don't have many of them.
Okay. Okay, take care.
Okay.
Late Night Conversation is a podcast brought to you by Late Night Library, where literature never sleeps. If you've enjoyed tonight's episode, please consider making a tax-deductible donation to Late Night Library by visiting latenightlibrary.org and clicking the donate button on our homepage. Your donation will further our nonprofit mission to sustain book culture, promote literature in schools and communities, and support a diverse array of writers early in their careers. Tonight's episode is sponsored by Optic Nerve Arts. Optic Nerve Arts Tattoo Studio has been serving Portland's tattoo needs with style and skill since 2003. Their talented artists are attentive, detail-oriented, and versed in a wide variety of tattoo genres. Check out their portfolio at opticnervearts.com or drop by their inviting, spacious studio at 2224 Northeast Alberta. Create some serious buzz for your business by joining Optic Nerve Arts and many book culture organizations as a Late Night Library sponsor. Sponsors reach thousands of readers and writers through our programming. Email LNL at latenightlibrary.org for more information. You can rate tonight's episode on iTunes and Stitcher and subscribe to our podcast through either service. Subscribers receive free access to every Late Night Library podcast, including Late Night Conversation. Find out more about the Future Library by visiting katiepatterson.org/future library. And don't forget that tonight you can also win a copy of Control Bird Alt Delete by Alexandria Peary. You can win by listening to this episode and correctly answering the following question before any other listener. How many years will pass before the Future Library books are available to the public? Email your answers to me at kristin@latenightlibrary.org. That's K-R-I-S-T-I-N at latenightlibrary.org. The first listener to answer the question correctly will receive a copy of Control Bird Alt Delete. Thanks for listening and most of all for reading. Talk to you later at Late Night Conversation.